Hello, tech fans, and welcome in to episode 145 of the Tech Sideline podcast, originating from TSL's High Tech Studios in the Virginia Tech Corporate Research Center. On Monday's episode, we analyze a disappointing 23-16 loss for Virginia Tech to Wake Forest from this past Saturday and what it means for the Hokies moving forward. Episode 145 of the Tech Sideline podcast gets started right now. It's great to have you with us for episode 145 of the Tech Sideline podcast. Whether you are watching live or archived on YouTube, listening on Apple Podcast, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcast, or on Stitcher, we are so glad you could join us as we record on Monday morning, October 26th. We've got our managing editor, Chris Coleman, with us this morning, our founder and general manager, Will Stewart, the best podcast producer in the land. He is Malcolm Stewart, taking your YouTube live questions for the end of the show. And I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes. This week and every week, the Tech Sideline podcast is presented by the Fisher Law Firm, Virginia's trusted DUI and traffic defense firm dedicated to defending individuals charged with traffic-related offenses. The Fisher Law Firm handles cases throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia. To date, the firm has defended tens of thousands of people charged with moving violations. For free consultation, call anytime, day or evening, toll-free at 1-800-680-7031. Again, that's 1-800-680-7031, or email the Fisher Law Firm at info@fisherlegal.com. Gentlemen, good morning. What a weekend of weather in Blacksburg. It was beautiful on Friday and Saturday. Sunday, chilly, cloudy. It looks like the warm weather is officially gone in Blacksburg.
It's coming, man.
It's a sad day when that weather, you know, it's going to be Blacksburg cold moving forward.
I think isn't it supposed to be warm this week, or am I?
Yeah, it's going to be warm again this week.
Yeah, it might get up to 70 once or twice.
And then it's going to give up. And so daylight savings time is coming up next weekend, right?
On Halloween.
Yeah, I remember it happened last year when I was in South Bend for the Notre Dame game. So we got an extra hour after the game.
Yeah. How was your weekend, Chris Coleman?
Typical. I didn't do much of anything. I went to the gym, watched the Tech game. Wrote an article on Sunday, and that's about it.
Where did you watch the Tech game?
I watched the Tech game at Champs.
Chris Coleman made the return to Champs.
Wow. Yeah, that's right.
Will, how was your weekend?
Good. So I was thinking, should I, when you ask how we're doing, should I start out with, I have two choices here. One of them is, you know that feeling you get when you're forgetting something? I got that feeling, and I still don't know what it is yet, and that feeling's always right. Or should I lead with, so the last song I heard before I got out of the truck in the parking lot was Mickey by Tony Basil. You know what I'm talking about, right?
No
idea. Oh, my gosh. Mickey, you're so fine. You're so fine. You blow me.
Oh, yeah,
Mickey.
Of course. That song was in Pitch Perfect, the movie. That's how I first learned about that song.
Really?
The only reason I've ever heard of it is because of Wayne's World. I'll be honest with you.
Well, that's what's called an earworm. It gets in your ear and gets in your head and... Do you guys wake up with a song in your head every day?
No.
Not necessarily.
I go to bed with one, but I don't think I ever wake
up. I typically do. It's weird.
I do take a shower first thing I do when I wake up, and I play music, but I don't wake up with one in my head particularly.
You know, I used to do that. I used to play music in the shower or, like, play a radio. Well, these days you can take something in the shower with you. You got all this waterproof stuff. My kids do it. Back in my day, no, you had a little radio you put on the back of the toilet and cranked up, and everybody else in the house would get mad at you.
You got to get amped up for the podcast. So I try and listen to some hype music because we got to bring the energy. Especially talking about a difficult 23-16 loss on Saturday.
All right. So for those of you who to continue on that tired subject, and then we'll get off of it. For those of you familiar with the Mickey song, that was played at the end of a movie called Bring It On, which was a cheerleading movie. Then there was this other raunchy cheerleading comedy movie that I saw one time that had a song at the end of it called That's Not My Name by the Ting Tings. Look it up. It's very similar in with drum beat type stuff, and Malcolm's heard it before because I played it on a on our RV trip way back in 2013. I played it a lot in the RV. That's Not My Name by the Ting Tings, and you will get an earworm similar to Mickey by Tony Basil. So let's put that to bed and move on.
We do have a new addition to the podcast set today, right to the right of Will Stewart. For those that are watching on YouTube, take a look at that. It's brought to you by Campus Emporium. Will, for those listening, tell our listeners what you have on your right leg right now.
This is a beer stein. Well, it's called a stein. On their website, of course, it's not called a beer stein. It's called a Virginia Tech stein.
We'll never condone putting beer
in that. No. Why would you put alcohol in this stein? No, it's
not like we have alcohol on the set right now or anything.
No. Yeah. Drinking any beverage.
We have sticking
of
in ale right now, of course.
So this is very cool. Nice, heavy duty. Real nice construction. I haven't read the description of it, so I can't go into a lot more detail than that. But we will drop this link down in the description for the YouTube video. Very nice, though. So that's today's Campus Emporium featured item.
And the Tech Sideline podcast also presented by the Southeast Regional Training Center. Will, why is that so important to the success of Virginia Tech wrestling, and how can our listeners or viewers get involved if they'd like to?
Well, in any collegiate sport, there are only three things that matter: recruiting, and recruiting, right? So the Southeast Regional Training Center helps with recruiting without getting bogged down in the details. And you can help by visiting southeastrtc.com. and donating to the Southeast Regional Training Center.
Episode 145 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Evan Hughes, Chris Coleman, Will Stewart, and Malcolm Stewart. If you have a question for Will or Chris, go ahead and drop it now if you're watching on YouTube Live, and we will get to it at the end of the show. We're going to break down the 23-16 win for Wake Forest on Saturday that dropped Virginia Tech to 3-2. We're going to talk about the offense and Hendon Hooker. We're going to talk about the penalties, and towards the end of the podcast, we're going to talk about the state of the fan base. So the Hokies lose 23-16, over 100 yards in penalties, the most under Justin Fuentes since he's been the head coach.
And I think that was 11 flags thrown, right? Which I think is the most also.
Hendon Hooker threw 3 interceptions. Khalil Herbert was held to under 70 yards on the ground, and Brian Johnson missed 2 field goals. Will, did Wake Forest win this game, or did Virginia Tech lose the game on Saturday?
That is an excellent question, and I think you can make the case that Virginia Tech lost it. So when you ask me if Wake Forest won it, I sit here and I immediately start thinking, what did Wake Forest do to win this game?
Certainly nothing in the second half.
Right. They did Wake Forest things. We talked about coming in that they were one of the best tackling teams in the country. And they were as good as advertised in tackling. But they didn't make a lot of exceptional plays. But something that I'm going to talk about in my Monday article today, you know, Wake Forest had a when Tech tied it at 10, Wake Forest had a 17-play, 75-yard drive in response, 7 minutes off the clock. They converted a third down, and then they converted 3 straight fourth downs. Fourth and 2, fourth and 1, fourth and 2. And that is the only point that I can recall right off the top of my head at which I thought Wake Forest won the game. They responded to something Tech did, and they coached aggressively and picked up the first downs. But, you know, I think for Virginia Tech, it was just one of those days. It just didn't make plays, and they made a lot of mistakes.
Chris, did Virginia Tech lose the game, or did Wake Forest win the game?
I think you asked me this same question last week with Boston College and Virginia Tech.
And that was easy.
I didn't really answer it. Because, Virginia Tech won by 26, but at the same time, BC really, really, really helped them out, right? And so I kind of feel like Tech – first of all, yes, Virginia Tech lost the game. And I think you can argue this year that Tech is now 1-1 in games like that, where they won one because of the other team's mistakes and they lost one because of their own mistakes. And in the end, 3-2, you are who you are. That was a disappointing standpoint of it. I thought when Virginia Tech played UNC, considering where the defense was physically and mentally and without – having all those coaches for all those weeks. I think Tech did about all they could do to win the football game against UNC. It was a bad matchup, and there were too many guys on defense that were just coming back from COVID or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't in the cards, but I thought Tech played as well as they possibly could. It's a shame they wasted that on a game that they didn't have a chance to win.
Yes.
Because they didn't do all they could do against Wake Forest. Like, what if they'd played their horrible game against UNC and lost by 30 or whatever instead of 11? But they had taken that good game that they played against UNC and played that good game against Wake. If we'd got blown out by UNC, that wouldn't make you happy, but we're 4-1 right now instead of 3-2, right? So that was the frustrating part. It was that was an extremely winnable game, and they made a lot of losing plays. And I'm just not even talking about the turnovers.
Right.
We'll get to those later, but just some stupid plays, uncharacteristic plays. Some of them that I thought weren't – like, I don't think they should have thrown a flag on Narelle Pollard. In fact, I think what caused that to happen is the fact that the officials were so late blowing the whistle on that play anyway. You've got five guys got the ball carrier wrapped up in the backfield. And I'm sitting there watching the game, and I don't get very animated during games these days. But I'm sitting there going, blow the whistle!
Yeah.
Like, he stopped. He's completely wrapped up. And if you've ever been a player on one of those, you get to that point where you're like, is the ref ever going to blow the whistle? And you feel like you should let go, but you also feel like maybe he's already blown it and I just didn't hear it. So I don't want to drag the guy down. And it gets you real frustrated briefly. And we saw that, you know, he gave the ball carrier a little shove. But it wasn't enough, in my opinion, for a penalty. That being said, things like that are going to happen in a football game where things, flags, whatever, don't go your way. And Virginia Tech, you know, they didn't respond well to every time either Wake Forest did something or the refs did something or something bad happened. They just lost their cool. It seemed like they just weren't ready from a mental standpoint.
Yeah. So a couple things. First of all, talking about best effort in losing in a losing game against UNC, that reminds me of a discussion you and I always have where the basketball team, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, the basketball team will go out and shoot 88% from the free throw line and lose a game anyway.
They'll shoot 88% against Duke or UNC or somebody, or Louisville.
In a close game, they'll shoot 62%
against Boston College.
So, next thing is towards the question of, you know, did Virginia Tech lose this football game? If you go look at the team stats, I'm just, you know, in a vacuum, pretend you didn't know the score. Virginia Tech had 28 first downs, Wake Forest had 18. Virginia Tech had 433 yards. Wake Forest had 346, I think. I'm reading this without my glasses.
Well, see, the box score I looked at said 316. I thought it was...
Well, it may have been corrected later.
Okay.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, this is an interesting discussion. On the play where Gerard Hewitt got thrown out, it was initially incorrectly entered into the box score as a 25-yard gain for Wake.
Oh, that, yeah,
it was a 5-yard loss by Wake and then 2 15-yard penalties, and that's a 30-yard difference. This says 346. It's been corrected to 316.
Okay.
I screen capped this from Live Stats right after the game. So we've actually gotten in a number of these discussions on Twitter with Damian Salas, who was generally listening to these. And there will be one or two mistakes like that per game. And in this case, it was something that they went back and corrected later. And the reason we got into it after the game, this game, was Teal and Nizialek, I believe, quoted a stat that this was – they were talking about the number of penalties in this game. And their information about past games was incorrect. They were looking it up on sites like College Football Stats, CFB Stats, and I was looking it up on HokieSports.com. And that's a situation where the original – mistaken stats went to CFB Stats and never got corrected. Later on in reviewing the game, Damian corrects it. So what winds up on Hokie Sports is correct after the game is reviewed. And this results in a lot of stats being out there in the world somewhere, which are actually incorrect. And so since we're talking about this, I got to go into the game recap and I have to change these team stats to actually be correct. So back to the topic, you know, 78 plays to 66 plays. Possession time was slightly in favor of Tech. You read all these stats, it looks like Tech won. And they didn't. They lost by a touchdown because of the mistakes and penalties and turnovers.
Chris, what's more concerning moving forward? Over 100 penalty yards or Hendon Hooker throwing three interceptions?
The penalty yards, for me. Hendon Hooker, we'll get into this more later, but his two lowest grading games of his career have come against Wake Forest. I think there's just something about Wake Forest. They know how to play him or something like that.
Do you think it's a Winston-Salem being close to Greensboro thing?
No, because he plays great against UNC, and UNC's Chapel Hill right there. You know, I don't think it has anything to do with that. I just think for whatever reason they've got his number, or maybe they've got the offensive staff's number. I don't know. But he's never had an issue with turnovers before.
Not like this.
As far as interceptions go. I mean, the two interceptions he threw last year were right at the end of games when, you know, Tech's trying to drive 90 yards, or one of them was like that.
And one of these was at the very end of the game.
And the other one was tipped. So, like, to me, the penalties are more concerning. Like, it was a rough game by Hooker for sure, but just looking at the fact that his two worst games from a PFF grading standpoint of his career have been against Wake Forest, that I think there's something to that. There's probably a reason for that.
Well, how about you? More concerning, over 100 penalty yards or Hooker's three interceptions? Moving forward,
funny, I don't think either one of them will persist. Virginia Tech one of the better teams in the country as far as not committing penalties, so that was uncharacteristic. And they were one of the better teams in the country as far as not committing turnovers, so that was uncharacteristic. So I don't – and now I'm double-clutching in my brain, and I'm worried that, you know, and we had talked about this on the podcast and in articles, that when somebody finally stopped the run, Virginia Tech would struggle with the downfield passing game because the wide receivers aren't getting separation. And it's unfair to say wide receivers because it includes James Mitchell. He's not getting separation either. So we worried that the passing game would struggle when the running game got stopped. So from that standpoint, Wake Forest, and this isn't brilliant, coaches know this stuff, Wake Forest has put out the blueprint for how to beat Virginia Tech. To beat Virginia Tech's offense. Now, you have to be able to execute it, and not everybody can execute it. Wake executed it well.
Episode 145 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. It's brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm. We're talking about Wake Forest beating Virginia Tech 23-16 on Saturday. I want to continue the conversation about Hendon Hooker because he was coming off of one of his best career games.
Oh, it was against BC. It was his highest grading performance of his entire career. And then Wake Forest, the very next week, it was the second worst grading game of his career, behind only last year's Wake Forest game.
Hooker's number, 17 of 33 through the air, 223 yards, one touchdown, three interceptions. It very well could have been four interceptions. You guys go back to the one-handed interception from one of the Wake Forest cornerbacks in the second half.
That was hit
the turf, and they ruled it an incomplete pass. That almost could have been his fourth interception of the game. Hooker on the ground, 17 attempts, 98 yards, contributing to Virginia Tech's 210 yards on the ground as a team. But I was going through one of the articles that was written on TechSideline.com, and one of the posters, Vic Dritt, in the comments section, posted this about Hendon Hooker, the fact that he is 1-3 in his last four starts. Virginia, Kentucky, Boston College, and Wake Forest. Is that a cause for concern that he is 1-3 in his last four starts? Is there anything that we should be reading into, or is it just that they played two really good teams at the end of 2019 and it's been a little bit of a slow start per se early in 2020?
Oh, I don't think either of the losses last year were his fault. I mean, he didn't have such a great passing game against Kentucky, but you know, he put up yards and points against UVA, and the offense as a whole put up yards against Kentucky. It's not Hendon Hooker's fault that Damon Hazelton can't catch an easy third down pass to keep that last drive alive.
Or that the defense can't stop an eight-minute drive.
Right, or tackle a mobile quarterback. Right. So the only loss of those three that you can put on Hooker was the Wake Forest game, and he had some help in that one, of course.
This is the worst blocking game that we've seen from this offensive line and tight end.
It was the worst
receivers.
Of everything in one performance. It was Hooker's worst game. It was the interior offensive line's worst game, which is why people are going to ask this question, why didn't Tech run inside more? It's, well, because their guards and center are having horrible games.
Yeah.
And so it was the interior offensive line's worst game, Hooker's worst game, and then you had a bunch of penalties. all of that together, man. I mean, you could overcome one of those. You know, right. if one of those three things happens, just one of them, Tech probably still wins the game, but all three happen at once and can't happen.
And so one of the things we talk about I think that Justin Fuente does a good job of putting his team back in position to win and getting them some momentum. And, you know, the fake punt in the 2016 ACC championship game is a classic example.
And here again, yeah.
You know, and so he runs a fake punt in this game. Beautiful timing. Clutch moment. And I think the offense completely squandered it.
Well, they faltered and didn't score.
No momentum came out of it.
Right.
I do want to talk about the offensive line for a moment. We'll talk about the running game and continue our conversation about the offense in this 23-16 loss. Episode 145 of the Tech Sideline Podcast brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm. Chris, in your preview article for the game, I believe you pointed this out. This is either statistics backing it up or it was Pro Football Focus that had Wake Forest second to last in the ACC at stopping the run.
That sounds right.
Carlos Boogie Basham, terrific game. To me, it felt like the Wake Forest defensive line had their way with Virginia Tech's offensive line that had been so good.
Tech's tackles played well. The interior of the line... Lasita Smith reverted back to his freshman form of 2 years ago. Doug Nestor looked like the Doug Nestor of last year. And he's still a young player. He's still a true sophomore. Brock Hoffman has been the low grader of the offensive line so far this year. And I think it's one of those things that, like, he hasn't played bad, but like he hasn't been like elite. He's been good, solid. But you know, he came to Virginia Tech from Coastal Carolina, and on Saturday we got the Coastal Carolina version of Brock Hoffman. All three of those guys on the same day for whatever reason. I don't know. The tackles played pretty well in general. Trey Turner blocked well on the edge. James Mitchell had the second worst blocking game of his career behind the Notre Dame game last year.
Yeah, there were a couple of instances, one or two where Mitchell was unfairly matched up against Boogie Basham. And then another one in which, you know, so the red zone execution was hideous, and we can get into that also. And one of them was, I think Virginia Tech was on the 4-yard line, and they ran a sweep to the left with Blackshear. Mm-hmm. And Mitchell wasn't alone. I think Nestor also just got blown up, and it was thrown for a 7-yard loss. So some of it was James just not blocking as well as he usually does. And other times are when he's way out on the end of the line and Boogie Basham's way out on the end of the line, and the run is to the other end, and Boogie Basham starts accelerating. That's a tough block for Mitchell to make, you know, and that happened at least once, maybe twice.
Khalil Herbert was held to under 70 yards on the ground. He came into the game as the nation's leading rusher in terms of yards per game, just below 150.
So let me jump in there. If you want to criticize play calling, this is an instance where you shouldn't. I believe Virginia Tech had second and two in the red zone. I don't remember exactly where. What do you do in that situation? You hand the ball off to Khalil Herbert, right? Well, that's exactly what they did, and he got thrown for a 1-yard loss because the blocking just wasn't there. So people who freak out and think everything is the offensive coordinator's fault, I'm not fond of the Blackshear sweep to the short side that I just talked about a minute ago, but on second and two in the red zone, running Khalil Herbert up the middle is a good call.
I was going to bring up the fact or ask the question more so, the fact that he was held below 70 yards. Is that a credit to Wake Forest defense? Is that a result of Virginia Tech's offensive line? Was it just an off game for Khalil Herbert? My question is, why did Virginia Tech, it seemed like at times, struggle to run the football on Saturday in your perspective?
It's some of both. Tech, as I just entailed, you know, the interior of Tech's line just wasn't good for the first time this year. In fact, it's the first time they've been anything less than really, really good. And when I say they weren't good, I'm comparing them to their own standards.
They had set a
high bar. They were still better than most past Virginia Tech offensive lines, right? But they weren't good by their own standards. Secondly, and you know, Fuente touched on this last Monday on Tech Talk Live. He said something like, how do you phrase it? He said, a coach will never tell you if he thinks another coaching staff can't coach. But he said, let me tell you this about Wake Forest staff. And he was talking about defense. He said, they have an answer for everything they throw at you from an X's and O's standpoint. He's like, they know their scheme and their players so well that everything you do, they know exactly how to counter it. So I think there was some of that. Like, and when you get that, like when it comes down to, when it's going to come down to players versus players, then your players have to out-execute their players.
Right.
You know? Like, if Wake Forest staff, defensive staff, is that good. And honestly, during the entire Dave Clawson era, I don't think I've ever watched a Wake Forest game where I thought, oh, man, Wake really got out-coached today. Right?
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just a really good staff. So when you play Wake Forest, your players have to beat their players.
So one of the plays we've been waiting for all year is the pop pass to Blackshear down the middle. And Cornelson finally, I don't remember exactly what point in the game it happened, but he pulls it out of his bag of tricks. And darned if, I don't even know which Wake Forest player it was or what position he played. He was all over Blackshear.
Right.
Hendon executed it perfectly, threw a perfect ball, hit him in stride. And they just tackled
him. Like, it gained 19 yards, so it was a good play. But if Wake had been
a half step slow,
it would have been a touchdown.
Yeah.
But they weren't a step slow because they were so well prepared.
Here's a quick tangent. You know, Wake Forest has gone to 4 consecutive bowl games under Dave Clawson. Will, do you think Wake Forest is a team that doesn't get enough respect from other ACC fans around the league?
I am really glad you asked me that question, and I'll answer it this way. Look at what happened in the rankings after Virginia Tech lost this game. They went from being number 19 or 20 in the AP to not even getting votes, while over in the coaches' poll, they're still getting a lot of votes. And when you see this happen, what it tells you is coaches respect what Dave Clawson is doing at Wake Forest. But they also respect what Justin Fuente is doing here at Virginia Tech. And so when they see that result, they don't punish Virginia Tech too much. Now, the AP sports writers, on the other hand, give it the old eye roll. How can you lose it to Wake Forest with when you got the leading rusher in the country? Boom, and nobody even votes for Tech.
But I feel like even fans, Chris, when they see Wake Forest, they think, oh, it's Wake Forest. Yeah. I don't think Wake Forest gets the respect in terms of Dave Clawson and the job he's done in being a really good offense, as we detailed on Thursday.
Yeah, he's a really, really good coach. You know, I think the details of recruiting rankings these days, like too many players get ranked, you know. Once you get past number, I don't know, but there's no reason to rank the number 750 player in the country and then the number 1,250 player in the country.
There's not that
much
difference.
Then the number 2,000 player in the country.
Right.
Because there's no way you can conceivably tell any difference between those players. They do it just for entertainment and to sell subscriptions, right? But fans buy into it. But in reality, once you get past a certain point, there's no difference between a lot of these players. And it all comes down to system fit, whether that player hits the weight room hard and is dedicated, player development, all of that stuff. So, like, Virginia Tech, they're slightly more talented than Wake Forest, but it's not like 2009 or whatever where they could just run them off the field.
Well, you go back to 2006 when Wake won the ACC, Tech pounded them.
Oh, they pounded them, right.
And was clearly the more talented team.
Right. Now, and that's the case for everybody. You know, I've made the mistake of saying, oh, there's no parity in college football anymore. And that's true when it comes to the national championship. There's only 5 or 6 teams that actually can compete for that. But there's a lot of parity everywhere else. Like, if you watched any – I watched the highlights of the Indiana-Penn State game. And I'm not saying Penn State doesn't have more talent overall than Indiana, because they do. But it's not like it used to be. Like, when I watch that Indiana running back go through the line and just run over that Penn State safety for a touchdown, that's talent on talent. When I watch that Indiana receiver beat that probably 4-star Penn State cornerback in the air in the corner of the end zone for a ball, that's not an X's and O play. That's a talent play.
Yeah.
The talent is spread out more now throughout college football than it used to be. The elite talent is all gathered at the top together.
They're stockpiling.
But the rest of it, once you get past the top 250 or 300 or so, guys, there's not just not a whole lot of difference. Like,
that was Wake Forest's highest ranked win, by the way, since the 90s against Virginia Tech, who was ranked 19th in the AP poll.
I want to say one thing. The bottom line on ESPN, they like to point out the fact that was like Tech's sixth loss under Justin
as
Forte,
a ranked team.
I mean, like every time
to unranked teams.
Oh, to unranked teams.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So that's his sixth loss as a ranked team to unranked teams.
Okay. Okay.
We're breaking down.
Never mind. That was I was going to say something.
You're
going
to go off.
Yeah.
Breaking down the 23-16 win for Wake Forest on Saturday, episode 145 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm. Last thing on the offense before we transition to the defense, because there were bright spots, there were positives, and we're going to talk about the defense in just a moment. You know, Virginia Tech did run for over 200 yards as a team.
210, I think.
210, the exact number. Hendon Hooker, the leading rusher with 98 yards. Khalil Herbert, 64 yards. Raheem Blackshear, 11 carries for 34 yards. And Oscar Bradburn shows up in the box score, by the way, for 14 yards rushing. If Khalil Herbert is not able to run for, let's say, over 100 yards per game, just how different does Virginia Tech's offense look when they have to rely on the passing game more?
The traditional passing game, not the smoke and mirrors passing game that is built off a successful
misdirection
running
game. And stuff
misdirection,
like that.
Yeah. Well, they still can't execute the traditional passing game for a variety of reasons. Their receivers aren't great, to be honest with you. And Hooker, that's just not the type of quarterback he is. Now, in defense of Hooker, you know, we all knew this at the end of last year. Like, if you didn't realize it by the last drive of the UVA game, then you should have realized it after that. You know, when he just couldn't stand in a pocket and behind and complete balls downfield. And I'm not talking just about Hooker. It was the whole offensive, the whole operation. The offensive line was too young. There weren't enough good receivers, and then he was a young quarterback who didn't have that background. So that was a spot that was the number one point of improvement for the spring.
What spring?
Right, right. So that was the idea for the spring. Okay, here's what we need to do to take a step forward as an offense. Here's what Hendon Hooker has to do to take a step forward as a quarterback. Get better in the traditional passing game. Well, there was no spring. And then they come back in August and start practicing, and there's no Trey Turner because, from what we understand, a good chunk, maybe even most of August practice, he wasn't even practicing because of injury. Plantar fasciitis. So, like, he didn't even practice this past week, really, from what we understand.
And you saw that manifest itself in the game. There was one play where he got up and he was, you know, plantar fasciitis, I think, is one of those things that I don't want
to. I've got it right now.
So is it true that you're fine and then you step on it wrong and all of a sudden it hurts like crazy?
It hurts more when you get up in the morning. But once you get going, sure mine's a milder case compared to whatever he's got. But I don't let it keep me from doing physical activities.
Right.
But I mean, it's there. I know it's there, and it's from when I was walking 5 miles a day back over the summer, just every single day.
So he's not 100%.
He's not 100%. Some of the receivers were out for corona-related issues in August. So when Hooker was there, like, he didn't have his top receiver, Trey Turner, and some of the other receivers were out too. And then finally they're about to start the season, and then Hooker himself is out for a long time. So they really haven't had a chance to get better at the traditional passing.
So is he a redshirt sophomore or redshirt junior?
Redshirt junior. Well, yeah, redshirt junior, but then he'll also be.
But
a
he could be a redshirt junior
again
next year.
Yeah.
And this may be a guy where things finally start to click. You know, as a senior, Brian Randall was that way.
Well,
Randall wasn't that great a quarterback until like 3 or 4 games into his senior year.
And it's hard to get better at something without practicing it. I know people poo-poo practice and don't think it's that important. It absolutely is important. And that's the thing. He had to get better in the traditional passing game, and for all the reasons I stated, he was not didn't have an opportunity to.
So what you're saying?
So he's the same player he was last year, except I think he's a little more athletic this year. But from a passing game standpoint, he's the exact same guy because he didn't have a chance to get better.
So for Virginia Tech, I'm trying to analyze what you guys are saying. For Virginia Tech to hit its full potential this year on offense, does running the football have to translate to success for the rest of the offense to open up?
Kind of looks that way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. With a caveat that, again, it was also Wake Forest, and his two worst games as a Tech starting quarterback have come against Wake Forest from a grading standpoint. Yeah. So it could be some of that too. But yes, I mean, I think it's important that Tech be able to run the football.
We spent nearly a half hour talking about the offense, breaking down Virginia Tech's 23-16 loss to Wake Forest on Saturday, but so much positivity surrounding the defense on Saturday in the loss. Let's transition from the offensive side to the defensive side of the ball. A reminder, if you have a question for Will or Chris, you're watching live on YouTube, be sure to drop a question and Malcolm will read them at the end of the show. Chris Coleman, one word to describe the Virginia Tech defense. They gave up just 23 points. What would it be?
Much improved.
Better.
Well, that was two words.
You can throw a hyphen in there.
Hyphen in there, does that count as one word?
Let it
count. Okay, yes. Or improved. If you told me before the game that Virginia Tech would hold Wake to 23 points and 316 yards of total offense, mm-hmm. I would have said, whoa, that's going to be a nice, impressive victory. We're going to win that one by double digits, maybe even 20 points. Everybody's going to be really happy on Sunday. Didn't work out that way. I thought the defense, they didn't get off to a good start, but they got better as the game went on for sure.
They didn't really seem to suffer when Jarrod Hewitt got
they got better. Yeah. They got better because he was the lowest grader of all defensive tackles, and Josh Fuga was the highest grader of all defensive tackles. So the guy who's too small to play in any other system besides the Tech's old system, and then you put in the bigger guy who's a better fit
probably
for this system.
Fit.
And yeah, they got better. It's football's complicated in a lot of ways, but some ways it's not.
And Fuga's probably getting in better football shape at this point.
I mean, and he's just getting
not better than Jarrod, just better.
Correct. You know, like he's just getting more experience as a player.
Yeah.
As a football player. So yeah, so Fuga maybe should play more. You know, not that I think Hewitt's a bad player or anything. I just there's going to be certain games where he's more effective than others with his size at 280 pounds. There's by modern standards, that's extremely small for a defensive tackle. So I was, on the whole, I was impressed with the defense. I thought Walker would give him a lot of trouble, but they shut him down. It was Beal Smith that broke off the big runs that I was surprised about. But you know, on the whole, that was better. The secondary, I thought, I was really impressive because Hartman's been an efficient quarterback. Wake's wide receivers are good. They had the number one grading wide receiver.
Yeah,
in the
Roberson.
ACC. Yeah, and he had six catches, but only for like 47 yards.
A lot of them were in the first half. Roberson ended up six receptions, 46 yards.
Right.
So they had four receivers who all were near 200 receiving yards coming into the game, and Roberson had the most receiving yards with 46.
Yeah, and he only completed 12 passes. Now, granted, I think they only attempted 17.
17, correct.
I think with a few sacks in there, but I think they really wanted to try to run the ball on Tech. And they did early, and I think they were maybe a little surprised they couldn't do it in the second half. I don't know. But on the whole, though, I was pleased with Tech's pass defense. I think starting the same players there, I think, helps.
Starting to yield some benefits.
One
word for Will. What would you use, Will?
I would say better. Chris, have you looked at the linebacking grades?
Yeah, they were I don't think Dax's was so hot, but
Dax didn't play a whole lot.
He didn't play a whole lot. Tisdale's was okay. Ashby's was probably the best he's had this year.
So the linebacker play is getting better. You know, things are getting better gradually.
One observation I had was we talked a lot about Rayshard Ashby over the last couple of weeks. That was a little bit of a slow start for him to begin the season. Chris, to me, it felt like watching Ashby on Saturday. It felt like he was in the right place at the right time.
More often. He's getting better between the tackles. I think he's more comfortable with the scheme. He's probably getting into better shape to a certain extent. That's still not going to be fully fixed until the off season, a whole off season worth of conditioning. But yes, he was better. He's not going to be reliable in plays outside the tackle box. So that's just something we're going to have to get used to. Like he couldn't catch Hartman on that touchdown run, and Hartman came into the game with negative rushing yards, right? And Ashby just couldn't keep up with him on that scramble. But for plays between the tackles, he was much, much improved, much more active. Seemed quicker going in a straight line, like getting from point A to point B, like when he had that sack.
So yeah, and then the sack, by the way, was also a strong play. He engaged the blocker, right. Knocked him on his butt, and made the sack.
That's right. So hopefully that's a sign of good things to come.
And we saw a little bit from Justice Reed. I think he's been dinged up, and hopefully he's getting better as well.
And we had heard last week that they had been working Dak some at Mike because they just didn't know whether Ashby was going to get it back at this point.
Yeah.
So that might have provided some extra motivation for him too. I don't know. Competition.
And we can talk about that in a minute.
Well, how much better is Tech's defense when Divine Diablo's playing?
Clearly a lot better. Now that said, you know, the run up the middle where Wake Forest just bulldozed into the end zone 6 yards out, Diablo was the first guy there.
Yeah.
And he hit the ball carrier and just kind of bounced off.
He got a very low rating in terms of tackling. Yeah. But as far as run fits, making the right decisions, he was good, and in coverage, he was good.
Yeah.
So, like, him and Devin Taylor have solidified the secondary as far as coverage.
Stabilized, yeah. And Taylor is at the free safety. And
Diablo is at the strong safety. I think. Honestly, at the beginning of the year, you know, when Jenkins was starting and Diablo was starting, that's how it was.
The other way.
No.
It was Diablo
at strong safety.
It
wasn't listed that way, but that's how it was. So, I assume they've kept him on the short side safety.
I don't think this is one of his better games, but clearly they're a better defense. You know,
right.
I thought he had a really good game against Boston College last week.
Yeah, he did.
Let's talk about Devin Taylor for a moment. Someone who transfers in late from Illinois State, where he was a really good FCS player. He came in as a corner. He's been playing safety. He was given a 68.8 coverage score, according to Pro Football Focus, which you mentioned in your recap article. Seems to improve the pass defense.
He's certainly improved the pass defense.
But I mean, just the job that he's done, Chris, coming in so late, moving positions. How important has he been to stabilize the secondary?
Now, if you remember, Changa Hodge got here late, but Devin Taylor got here even later.
Yeah,
like I think practice had been going on for 2 weeks before he even hit the portal and announced he was.
Because Illinois State's FCS, right?
Yeah, correct.
And FCS decided they weren't going to play.
And Tech's practice had already started, so then. He transfers, gets in, and then has to go through COVID protocol.
Two weeks of protocol.
Okay. It's like I wrote the other week. Like I don't bet he didn't have his first full contact practice until late August or early September, about a month after practice started, right? And then he's playing corner. Oh, and then he's out for a game with COVID-related issues. And then he comes back for UNC and plays a few snaps. And then the next week it's boom, let's move him to a completely different position, safety. He's barely even practiced at cornerback, and now we're going to start him at safety. So he's actually mentally he's made that transition really well because playing pass defense it's a lot more complicated than it seems. I think they've made some things simple for him. I think they keep him deep a lot, which. You don't have to doesn't give you a lot of responsibilities.
You don't show up on the highlight film.
right.
It's getting beaten downfield.
Yeah, but on the whole, he's done a good job there. As a safety, I would say he covers like a corner and he tackles like a corner because he didn't. You were right. He had another one the other day on one of those long runs by Bill Smith where he went up and didn't even try to wrap him up. He just kind of put his shoulder into him, and Bill Smith just kept going.
So he's got to get better at that point.
He's got to get better at that. But, again, when you've got half the team out with COVID or whatever before the season and you're just trying to get 50 guys together so you can have a practice, you're not going to have a tackling practice, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can't afford to lose anybody else to injury. So I don't think Tech – tackled very much in the preseason, and that's kind of showing up at times.
Breaking down Virginia Tech's 23-16 loss to Wake Forest on Saturday, episode 145 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm. In a little bit, we're going to talk about state of the fan base a little bit. There was a lot. It felt like there was some negativity on social media and the boards a little bit more than normal. We're going to talk about that. But to wrap up the defense, I don't have a clever way to introduce grit on the podcast today, but we do need to get a grit read in. So what I'm going to do is, Will, we're going to throw on these hats. We're going to talk about grit, but I'm going to ask you for the grit defensive player of the game for Virginia Tech. One player who showed grit. Who would you pick?
Wow, who would I pick? Can I pick Barno?
Absolutely. Amari Barno, 5 tackles, solo tackles, 1 assist, 6 total, 3 tackles for loss.
Highest grader on defense, at least as far as the preliminary grades.
But bam.
There you go. Grit. Proud partners here at Tech Sideline, a proud sponsor of the Tech Sideline podcast.
So, dear Amari, in the off room, get in the off season, get in the weight room and show some grit in there, man. And you've got a shot.
You know, when I was watching the game on Saturday, I was sitting there thinking, you know, we've got some guys who I think have talent who, like, Barno hasn't really had a chance because he was lifting like a linebacker because that's the position he always thought he was going to play. So this is an I'm not blaming Barno for this. But we've got some guys that aren't big enough at certain spots for their position. Sometimes it's their fault, sometimes it's not. Like, Hewitt can't help that he's undersized for defense tackle. He's our best weight room warrior, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he works as hard as he can.
There are some other guys whose names I won't name that I don't think put 100% into it from a strength and conditioning standpoint. And I say that as someone who lifts weights almost every day. I can look at somebody and tell these days exactly how much effort they're putting into it. I would assign partners. Like, I would – I'm not going to name names, but there's somebody on the team that I would make hang out with, like Brock Hoffman and Jared Hewitt in the weight room.
Or Dorian Strong's dad, as we talked about. Right, or,
yeah, exactly. Well,
Dorian could just hang out with his dad.
Dorian can just hang out with his dad. Yeah, that'll be fine. That's the main thing I want to say. Like, I'm actually – we'll talk about this later, but I'm thinking – always thinking long-term, of course, and I want to see some more buy-in by specific players to strength and conditioning, because there's 2 or 3 guys, 4 guys maybe, that I think are costing themselves. Maybe 1 or 2 of them even might even cost themselves money, because they're just not that they don't fully grasp what a weight room can do for
you. I would tell those young men, you're not going to be 18 to 22 your entire life. You'll get down the road to the point I'm at now in my mid-50s where you won't have the energy anymore to do that. You know, you'll go and you'll do your workout and you'll stay in shape, but you won't have that raw energy and strength. So just enjoy it while you're young, man. Go for it.
And someone who we're not going to have enough time to touch on, who definitely had a lot of strength and energy on the weekend, Jamari Connor, 8 solo tackles, led the team, 10 tackles overall, led the team, also had a tackle for loss. Again, bright spot for Virginia Tech defense. It's had a lot of players out the last couple of weeks due to COVID-19 and contact tracing. And so Virginia Tech defensively putting together one of their best games of the season in a loss on Saturday.
So what have they allowed? They've allowed 37 points combined the last 2 games after that mess at UNC. That's a really good job.
Well, they got a stiff test coming up, though. We'll talk about that on Thursday.
It's a different animal.
And that's a good tease. On Thursday afternoon, we'll have a Tech Sideline podcast, episode 146, completely analyzing, breaking down, and previewing Virginia Tech and Louisville. All right, we're going to step aside for a break. When we come back, we talk a little bit about the fan base, the reaction to the loss on Saturday, Wake Forest, and then we get into your questions for those that are watching on YouTube. You're listening and watching to episode 145 of the Tech Sideline podcast, brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm.
If you have received a DUI or other traffic-related offense, the road ahead can seem uncertain. Here at Fisher Law Firm, we have a team that is with you every step of the way. We have the experience that comes along with having defended more than 30,000 criminal and traffic cases statewide, and the expertise to get the job done. Call anytime, day or evening, for your free consultation or a complimentary copy of my book. Don't forget to ask us about our free appeal guarantee. To learn how we can help solve your problem, check us out at FisherLegal.com. This is Jonathan Fisher, class of 98. Let's go Hokies.
Welcome back into episode 145 of the Tech Sideline podcast. Whether you are watching live on YouTube, watching archived on YouTube, or listening, it is so great to have you with us as we continue to break down and analyze the 23-16 win for Wake Forest over Virginia Tech on Saturday. Chris Coleman, Will Stewart, Malcolm Stewart, and Evan Hughes back with you. I want to take a couple of minutes here before we get to the questions on YouTube Live. If you're watching, go ahead and drop those now in the comment section, and Malcolm will read them at the end of the show. After any loss, not just for Virginia Tech, for all sports teams, there's always going to be reactions from fans. But it did feel like there was a little bit more added negativity on social media and the message boards following Virginia Tech's loss to Wake Forest. Will, how much of that negativity is warranted from the loss to Wake Forest, and what were your thoughts?
So I was I was surprised by the post-game reaction. People were really mad about losing to Wake. They weren't really mad about losing to North Carolina. And Virginia Tech fans as a group hate North Carolina way more than they hate Wake Forest.
Right.
So I just got to thinking about this stuff. And first of all, were you paying attention? You know, we picked a one-score game. I don't know what the – again, the bookies, when they set their odds, they're trying to get people to bet. They're not telling you what's going to happen in the game. But they had Virginia Tech favored by 11 or 12 points, and Chris and I didn't see that.
I think I picked a 41-35 Tech, and
– and I picked a very similar score.
And I wasn't – I was probably like 80% going to pick Virginia Tech to win, but it's not something I did just automatically. You know,
I had some concerns about this.
I did too.
The Wake Forest offense. And so, you know, part of me wants to say to people that got really upset, were you paying attention? You know, but it goes just beyond analyzing this matchup. And you get into, so the difference between the UNC game and the Wake Forest game is that Tech played hard, came back from a deficit against UNC, showed a lot of heart, executed really well offensively. You know, so there was a lot to respect there. In this, and it's funny, the defense was terrible against UNC, but the offense was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Fast forward to the Wake game, and the offense was pretty terrible in terms of turnovers and not executing in the red zone. But the defense was pretty good. And so one aspect of this is that fans appear to respond better to a good offensive performance in a loss as opposed to a good defensive performance. And this has been the story of Virginia Tech football forever. The 14-10 loss is a painful loss. The 56-45 loss,
at least you were entertained.
You know, it wasn't as painful. So there's that part of it. But a lot of the criticism centered around the – and I do want to address this, and I might go on for as long as 5 minutes. The Virginia Tech coaching staff, quote, not having the team prepared, unquote. I'm sorry, do you watch much college football? I say this every year. I say this. This isn't a bunch of robots. It's a bunch of college kids. Even the pros struggle to come out with consistent effort. And college football, you never know what you're going to get from week to week. And you see this all over college football. And, you know, I could give you examples. I won't, but you've seen a lot of it. So it's a common occurrence for a team to come out flat and out of sync, and we don't know why it happens. There are people that get paid a lot of money to try to figure out why this happens.
And they can't figure it out.
And then you see fans, they say things on Twitter like I tried to find the thread earlier in the podcast where a Tech fan says, Fuente never has a team prepared. They always get down early. What? Where were you during the NC State game and it was 17-0 Virginia Tech 8 minutes in? Always, you should be very careful about using words like always and never. Very carefully. Don't just throw them around because you're mad. So there's that. And as far as getting a college football team to play hard every time out, or a college basketball team, by the way, to get them to play to a certain level every time out, almost nobody can do that. What about Clemson? Well, what does Clemson have that most teams don't have? What does Alabama have that most teams don't have? Competition every single day in practice. Every single day. If you mess up, you might lose your job. Now, at schools at the Virginia Tech level, and I'm not criticizing this guy. I'm just holding him out as an example. Is James Mitchell ever going to lose his starting job? No. You got James Mitchell. You got Eric Galley. You got Drake Dulius. And that's it. James Mitchell is going to play whether James Mitchell has a good week of practice or not. There is nobody behind James Mitchell threatening his job. And there are a lot of examples of that up and down the Virginia Tech starting lineup. You seen any running backs beside Raheem Blackshear and Khalil Herbert? No. Are you going to see any running backs beside those guys? No. So that's part of the special sauce of getting teams to play hard every time out, is that competition every single day in practice that, frankly, most programs just don't have it. And it's just because they don't have rosters stocked with 4- and 5-star guys who are driven to take your job. So this expectation that you can just cart these robots out on the field and they're going to execute at the same level every game, that's just not going to happen. And what you hope, and here's another difference in Virginia Tech football. This got me, I actually went and looked up the box score for the 1999 West Virginia game. Evan, can you do me a favor and find out what West Virginia's record was going into that game? It was not good.
It was like
3-5?
3-5 or something.
That
like
was
that.
Not yeah. a good football team.
Yeah.
And yet, one of the best teams in college football, Virginia Tech, struggled with West Virginia that night. It happens, but the difference was when it came crunch time, you had a guy with the raw talent of Michael Vick and the talent of Shane Graham to make a difference.
Two NFL players.
They were 3-5 going into that
two
game.
Two NFL all pros.
Yeah, you know, and that was not a good team, and yet, and it's funny, if you look at the box score, it's not like Tech turned it over a lot. They outgained West Virginia. They didn't turn it over a lot. It was just a weird night where a lot of things went against Virginia Tech, but they had the sheer talent to overcome it. And that's just not really true of Virginia Tech football right now. If you turn it over a lot and things aren't going your way, you're much more likely to lose. And one last point I want to make is that and we talked about this on the podcast, Fuentes got a knack for keeping his team close. Not every time, but in general, he's got a knack for keeping his team close when things aren't going well. He does something to keep it close. And when you can lose the turnover battle 3-0 to a team that Wake Forest didn't make any mistakes that I can think of. Right. They didn't turn it over. They blew a coverage against James Mitchell, mm-hmm. and that resulted in a touchdown. But otherwise, they played a really solid game. When you can turn it over, the turnover margin is 3-0, and you still keep it within one score, you know, that's pretty good. So there's a recency bias. You see the way Virginia Tech played against Boston College, you think the rest of the season is going to go that way. you see the offensive line, and you think they're going to blow people off the ball like that every single game. Well, they're not. And then you look and see what the Virginia Tech passing game was not able to do against Wake Forest, and Hendon Hooker turns it over 3 times, and there's a recency bias that all the rest of the season is going to go like that. It's not, you know. So I don't want to get preachy. This is just a bunch of thoughts I had on the whole reaction. You know, this is a team that can get beat. They have to play well to win. They can get beat by anybody they play. And yes, that includes little old Wake Forest.
You know, Chris, do you think that the reaction stemmed from just people not realizing how good Wake Forest is?
I think that's certainly part of it. I think in this country right now, I think people are a little bit on edge. So when something bad happens or something they don't like, they're a little extra angry mm-hmm. these days. I think that's human nature. I think that's part of it. Also, I think there's two different football fans. There's some people who just watch the games, and then when the game is over, they don't talk about it. And then there's other fans that are on their phones on the internet the entire game, and then they're on the internet afterwards to talk about the game. And I'm not saying one is better than the other, but if you go hang out with a bunch of angry people after a game, then you're just going to make you angry. So, like, everybody on Twitter is after a loss, you go on Twitter, you're going to read stuff, and it's just going to make you mad.
Magnified.
Right? Like, or get on the boards, even our boards, and it kind of feeds on itself, you know, the negativity. I had a good day on Saturday because, you know, I watched the game, then I went to the grocery store, and then I made dinner, and, you know, I went through the boards a little bit. I could see that people were angry, but I really just did my thing and didn't pay attention to what Tech fans were saying on Saturday, and I was in a much better mood for it. I went to Champs for the game, and I was at a table by myself, a table for 10 upstairs. And most of the rest of the other tables were full, but the weird thing is, like, everybody was in Tech gear. They were there because of the game. It was something to do, but none of them was watching the game. It was just so strange. Like, there a lot of the one of the tables was like right under one of the TVs, and they couldn't see the game. There was one table of these two dudes and these two girls, and one of the guys was really into the game. The other guy was just busy talking to the girls. And there was a family there, that were all decked out in tech gear, but none of them were watching the game. It was just like people were there because the game was going on. It was an excuse to get out of the house, but they didn't care.
That's weird.
They didn't care. And then I wanted a change of scenery for the second half, so I went downstairs. Maybe I have better luck down there. Maybe Tech can come back and win the game. And there weren't as many people down there, and the ones who were there were not paying any attention to the game. I just don't think as many people care this year. And I honestly notice
he said this year.
This year. I think this year is about making enough money to keep your athletic department afloat. Look, every team has a different story. Every team has players who, a certain number of players who probably went the entire offseason thinking there's not going to be a season. And then all of a sudden, they're caught off guard at the end, right before practice starts, saying, oh, we're actually going to have a season? Oh, crap, I'm 10 pounds overweight.
Oopsie.
And now, you have some guys who took this offseason seriously and some didn't, and this is the same for every team. I have a hard time getting serious about this season, and it's not Virginia Tech thing. I love baseball. You know, I normally watch about 150 Atlanta Braves games this year, or each year. I think I watched 5 or 6 this year. I just couldn't get into it because the season was shortened. I didn't know what to expect. I think the whole, entire talk over the spring and summer of is there going to be a season, is there not going to be a season, and all the arguments about that around all sports, I think it just made me mentally fatigued. So when the seasons actually did start, I just didn't care. I haven't watched a single NFL game. I really haven't watched any college football except for Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think a lot of people, like unless Tech just completely stinks this year, I don't think the season matters.
The other thing it's about is just playing the games to just keep fans engaged.
Right.
Otherwise, you'll lose a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. And to keep it as normal as possible. But even that, you know, when you actually turn on a game and you see nobody there, it doesn't make you feel normal.
So one of the things I'm experiencing is I realize I've gotten used to watching quiet football. And you see clips from seasons past and you're like, wow, I forgot it was like that. Those fans are going crazy. There's all kinds of noise in that stadium, you know, and that's sad, and I'm looking forward to the day that that's over.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking forward to hearing Malcolm Stewart's voice on episode 145 of the Tech Sideline podcast. Good discussion. Let's turn it over to those that have questions on YouTube, and then I've got a couple of questions that were submitted before the show on Twitter. Malcolm, how are you doing?
Pretty good. We'll start with Wes Smallwood. Has anyone ever received a good explanation of the kick-catch interference call?
You know, I only saw the replay that they played on TV. The ball did hit the ground, right, and bounce up. Right?
I don't know. I watched it a couple of times last night, and it may have actually just kind of bounced off the tee.
Okay, if it didn't hit the ground, then I think it's a simple call. But if it hit the ground, If it hit the ground, it's anybody's game. But
right.
I'm pretty sure that – I think if it never hit the ground, then I think it becomes like a regular return.
I think ultimately what the refs decided was the ball didn't hit the ground. Now, the Wake Forest guy, I did not see a fair catch signal.
Right. I don't think it had anything to do with
but
that.
But you have to allow him to catch it.
Correct. And Fuente didn't freak out about it. Like, he wasn't going crazy on the sideline or yelling. Now, he yelled about something earlier in the game. I mean, he lost it early in the game. When they went to call an illegal substitution penalty on Wake Forest and they threw the flag, but they realized, oops, we shouldn't have done that. We should have let the play play out and then throw the flag.
And Trey Turner was supposedly wide open.
Tech had I saw him. He was going across the field open.
Oh,
and we had actually had one dialed up that, assuming we'd thrown the ball accurately to him, it would have been a big play. Fuente lost it over that, and I don't blame him.
Bad officiating.
Right. It wasn't one of those things where, oh, I thought I saw a hold, so I'm going to throw a flag, and it wasn't a hold. It was just one of those things that's like illegal substitution. You throw your flag after the play starts and you let the play run out.
Right.
When it's defensive illegal substitution, because the offense might hit a big play. Right.
Yeah.
So he lost it over that. He didn't lose it over the over the own side kick. So I would, they might have got it right. So I'm guessing it didn't hit the ground.
I would answer the question this way. It is kick catch interference, assuming the ball did not hit the ground, and I think that's their story and they're sticking to
it. And I don't that's nobody's fault. Like you don't blame Dax for that, because I'm on the coverage team. I'm just gonna assume the ball is gonna hit the ground and I'm gonna take the guy out.
Yeah.
Good question. Thanks for the explanation, gentlemen.
All right, from Joseph Warren. Many are blaming this loss solely on the coaching staff, especially Fuente. Do you agree, or is this loss more on our players' inability to execute properly?
Okay, I'm going to jump in here, and I'll try to keep it down. We as fans watch Virginia Tech football year after year after year, and we want Virginia Tech to win. And the players come and go. And I think the fans don't understand the typical player's perspective. There's a lot more going on in a player's mind than winning the game for the team. And this isn't a criticism. I'm just pointing out guys got a lot going on. And could you repeat the question, Malcolm? A lot of fans have been blaming the coaching staff.
Blaming the loss solely on the coaching staff, especially Fuente.
So that question isn't really related to what I'm saying. I think it goes back to what I was talking about earlier. There is no secret sauce to getting the team playing at their top efficiency. Those that are criticizing the play calling, there was another play we haven't even talked about yet where Hendon Hooker had nothing but green grass in front of him, and Christian Darrisaw, of all people, didn't make the block that would have sprung him for a touchdown. There's nothing a coaching staff can do about that. When you call the fake punt at the perfect time and later on your team does nothing with that, you know, when you call the pop pass to Blackshear, which you've been holding for the fifth game, and, man, when we finally call it, it's going to go for a touchdown, and it doesn't.
And you know, Tech executed it pretty perfectly.
They did.
Yeah, they did. Wake Forest executed it a smidge better. Yeah. You know, so I just that's just fans who are just waiting. That they don't like the coaching staff. They'd like a new coaching staff, and they come out of the woodwork after a loss, justified or not. That's my take.
The blame can be shared by everybody. I do think it's harder to overcome bad games these days because you don't have as much talent. The talent's more spread out. I remember reading Frank Beamer's book, Turn Up the Wick, and he's talking about the 1999 Rutgers game. And he could just tell at the team hotel that they weren't mentally dialed in. And I remember his quote in the book was, he gets them on the bus to go to the stadium, and he says, you guys better get it right between here and the stadium because you don't have it right now. And Tech played a horrible game that night against Rutgers. I mean, they still won by like 40 because Rutgers was the worst team in the country and Tech was the second best. I mean, they completely steamrolled them with talent. But Tech played an awful game.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they gave up like 28 points. That defense gave up yards to Rutgers and just didn't play well.
Evan, can you look that score up? Because I remember Michael Vick having four touchdown passes in like the first 15 or 20 minutes.
Well, yes. I mean, Michael Vick versus Rutgers, that's going to happen. But defensively, we didn't play well.
Interesting.
Bad game.
Okay.
And there's been so many other games. I mean, all those years where Tech won 10 games, it's not like they – played a great game, each one of those wins or whatever. They could overcome it with because they had better players than everybody else, right? But I don't know, like the 2008 season when Tech won 10 games and they had to rely they had to good call.
I didn't mean to interrupt the train of thought. Technology. I've never gotten up in the middle of the podcast, but I have it up on my laptop. But instead, Malcolm, if you throw the camera on me real quick, it is. Yeah. So Will has the, what is this? RC Cola bottle. I actually have this at my house as well. And right on the side here, it's Virginia Tech opponents, 1999. And
Now let me guess, 62-28.
Rutgers, what'd you say?
62-28.
No, sir. Just under 62. Close. You want to take a guess, Chris?
58-24.
58-20, final score. Tech beat Rutgers. It was the fifth game of the year. Hokies were coming off a 31-7 win over UVA the week prior.
My whole point there was like Frank Beamer was mad because they didn't play well that game. Rutgers was just so bad, and Tech had better players than everybody, that it didn't matter. Like, now, these days, if you have a bad game, the talent is so spread out, you're going to be able to tell, right?
Yeah.
We played plenty of bad games under Frank Beamer. We just had way better players than everybody else, and it didn't, you know, you didn't notice it as much. So that's just the nature of the beast with the talent being spread out around college football. Like, not even, like, as well as we perceive Penn State to be recruiting, they aren't quite recruiting at the Clemson, Alabama level.
Yeah.
Because when you watch their highlights of that Indiana game, I mean, those plays I mentioned earlier, like, Indiana put some guys on the field that were as good as Penn State's players.
I know.
And yeah. So that goes back to my whole point. Then once you get past a certain level in the recruiting rankings, you shouldn't even do rankings at all, because it just, I think it gives people an inaccurate view of reality. And I just think the talent is more spread out these days than it was in the past. And you're talking about college kids, and they're not going to be mentally dialed in each and every week, so there's going to be more inconsistency for everybody, in my opinion.
Great answer. Let's do one more on YouTube Live, Malcolm, whatever you'd like, and I've got a couple on Twitter.
So we've got a really short one for Chris. Where's your shirt from?
I don't think I can say. sponsorship reasons.
But I'm bum bum.
but you can email me, chris@techsideline.com, and I will tell you.
Let me jump over to Twitter real quick. We've got a couple of great questions. I want to start with Hunter Elliott. He says, Hokies running game got exposed by Wake's very athletic D-line. When will Tech adjust away from always zone blocking to an attacking man-on-man north-south running, especially in short-yarded situations?
Never.
We always run to the sidelines first.
Well,
when they tried to run it inside, I mean, remember they ran it inside on the third and one early in the game and got stopped. They ran it inside on second one in
second
the red
two
zone
in the
and
red
got stopped.
Zone got stopped.
You know, if they had adjusted to that in this game, it would not have worked, because the interior of the offensive line just had their worst games of the season. So yeah. I think so. If they didn't adjust to it, that might have been one of the reasons. It's like, man, those guys on the inside are playing horrible this week. I can't, with confidence, call this particular play because those guys are playing so bad.
So in this
particular game. So
I've never been a big fan of attacking teams laterally. I know why coaches do it, but I've always been the fan of attacking directly and attacking downfield. And I remember watching the year that Fuente, his last year at Memphis, when they were playing Ole Miss. Ole Miss was like number five team in the country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because they were – old Hugh Freeze had that recruiting mojo going,
recruiting.
Know what I mean.
Yeah.
So they had a lot of good talent. And Memphis knocked him off, and that's when people really started paying attention to Fuente. But I remember tuning in to watch the fourth quarter of that game, and Ole Miss had the superior talent and speed, and Memphis was still running a lot of stuff to the perimeter, to the sidelines, and I remember watching it thinking, why are you doing that? That team is way more athletic than you are. So I'm not really making a point here. I'm not approving. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying – I'm just not a big fan of the lateral stuff either, but I understand why coaches mix it in to spread the field and get the defense spread out.
Trivia. Ole Miss got up 14-0 in that game.
Really?
And Memphis came back and pretty much blew them out.
Three or four straight touchdowns, yeah. And
James Copeland asks, should we just lean more on the O-line to wear down opposing defenses instead of continuing to go to the edge behind wide receiver and tight ends when the perimeter blocking isn't working?
That's inaccurate. Perimeter blocking has been awesome this year. It was not on Saturday, but on the whole, like, I would have gone into that game thinking Trey Turner, Tavion Robinson, Evan Fayers, they're all having great seasons blocking.
Yeah.
Kale Smith.
James Mitchell's having a great season blocking. Christian Darrisaw is on the edge as an offensive tackle. You got some guys on the edge that can block. Turner had a really good game blocking on Saturday, but everybody else didn't. Yeah. The tackles played well, but the tight ends didn't have a good game. So basically, every shred of evidence we collected for this Tech team, it was like the reverse on Saturday. So if you've been reading my Inside the Numbers articles, I think I dedicated a section to, like,
about 3 weeks ago,
about two or three weeks ago, about how good Tech's perimeter blocking had been. They've graded out really, really well. Yeah. So I understand why they're going to that well, because they've been so good out there.
They just laid an egg Saturday. It happens.
Yeah, you can't overanalyze it. They just played.
You can analyze it, but don't overanalyze.
Well, let's do one more, because this got 8 likes, and this was the most liked reply to my tweet. It's actually from Diablo fan account. He wants to know, Why do we struggle to execute a traditional drop back passing game?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Chris has been watching the grades all year, and the offensive line blocking, while stellar in the run game, is just okay in the pass game.
Well, it was better. It was they actually graded up pretty. It was bad against BC.
Yeah.
It was good against Wake, actually, which I think that means whoever's grading that blames those sacks on Hooker for holding the ball too long.
I know one sack.
At least definitely he held the ball too long. Yeah. So they actually did a pretty good job against Wake. Some of it is like Hooker's background as a quarterback. He's just not that type of quarterback. He can become one for us to a certain extent, but you have to be able to practice, and they didn't have spring, and then he was out for part of the preseason. His receivers were out for part of preseason, so he hadn't been able to actually practice what he needs to get better at, right? And then to top that off, they don't have much receiver depth.
And the receivers just are, as we've said over and over, they're not getting separation.
They're not getting separation. Trey Turner's the same player he was as a freshman. Maybe not as good, quite frankly.
Well, as we've talked about also.
He's a better blocker.
He's not 100%.
He's a better blocker. Right, right. But he hadn't been 100% since his freshman year.
Yeah. Now, he was the one guy I can think of who was actually wide open a few times.
He was, right, right. But generally speaking.
Yeah.
So the quarterback's not naturally gifted at it, and then it's not like they're running dynamic receivers out there. Like Caleb Smith, generally speaking, he's been a good blocker, but he's not a very quick guy. So him coming in and out of breaks and things like that, it's just it's not a great option, but there's not any good options there. Paiute was supposed to be a good option, and he broke his leg or foot or whatever.
Yeah.
Elijah Bowick was a upper-level three-star, lower-level four-star recruit who spent his entire career hurt. I think he finally dressed out for a game for the first time last week. Darryl Simmons was like lower-level four-star, upper-level three-star. He's been out, and I think he dressed for the first time this past week. I think he dressed for the Wake Forest game. But he hasn't been practicing in 6 weeks. So
it's a number of things to answer your question.
You're throwing Changa Hodge in there. Changa Hodge didn't get here until mid-August. Never didn't have the spring to learn the offense. Practice gets interrupted. Who knows if he was out with COVID-related issues? And I think he played 15 snaps against Wake. I mean, so it's a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of things.
And there is no quick fix here.
There is not. It's not a quick fix at all. It's something that can be improved with practicing for an extended period of time without having to worry about game planning for an upcoming opponent.
Right.
Which is the spring or the first 2 to 3 weeks of August practice.
I always tell Will and Chris, it's a quick fix for me to limit the amount of time we spend on the podcast, and then we spend an hour 15, hour 20 minutes on the show.
That's
fine. A great show today nonetheless, and every time we bring up the time on the podcast, we always get comments. We enjoy the long podcast, so today a long podcast, a lot to break down, a lot of great questions.
The only issue for me on Monday is I have to finish my Monday article. So that's why I can't go too long on the Monday podcast.
Well, that's going to be on techsideline.com. There's also going to be a lot of other great content on the website this week. Chris Coleman, what can our readers expect?
Your normal stuff. Will's Monday Thoughts today. We'll have a Brandon Patterson review. I'll do an Inside the Numbers, whenever Tech loses, I try to make a point of pointing out the most positive things instead of just harping on the most negative.
So I'll probably be defense this time around.
Yeah, we'll probably hit on some of the defensive line guys, probably Fuga. I'm going to point out some things offensively, of course, that were bad, but I'm not going to just completely unload on them. like what a lot of people do when somebody loses a football game. So we're going to have that. Gosh, we'll have another podcast on Thursday. So much that I can't remember.
Which is now on the main website, by the way.
Yeah, so Corey Van Dyke is doing, what do you call it, run it back?
Yep.
So this coming opponent is Louisville, so he'll have to find somebody from that 2005 Gator Bowl, right, to talk to?
He can talk to Marcus Vick.
Talk to Jimmy Williams, man.
He could talk to Marcus Vick about
you know, if wouldn't it be great if he could talk to Justin Hamilton? He was knocking the snot out of people in that game.
Or, yeah, him and Daryl Tap.
Is that the last time Virginia Tech? I haven't done my Louisville prep. Is that the last time Virginia Tech played Louisville?
I'm pretty sure.
And this is the first time in the ACC. Louisville joined in 2014, so this is the first time the Hokies have played the Cardinals.
And we're not going to play them at home until at least 2026.
And they weren't even scheduled to play them. It was added in later, right?
I think we were scheduled to play.
Really?
Okay, yeah.
That's
no, or maybe next year.
It was either this year or next year.
Yeah,
it
might have been next year. I don't remember.
So, looking forward. Hope you can join us Thursday afternoon, episode 151 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We will
episode 146.
I'm sorry, you're right. Sorry, 146. I'm getting excited for episode 150.
150 coming up.
It's coming up in a couple of weeks. But episode 146 on Thursday. I hope you can join us then. All right, that'll wrap things up on this Monday episode, breaking down Virginia Tech's loss to Wake Forest. Mind, it's a great time to subscribe to TSL and become part of the family. $84.99 is the annual price, $8.49 the monthly price, and $29.99 the student price. Will, Chris, any final thoughts before we sign off?
Nope, time to go do my article.
Okay, looking forward to reading that, and that'll do it for us. Again, thanks so much for listening and watching. For our managing editor, Chris Coleman, our founder and general manager, Will Stewart, the best producer in the land, Malcolm Stewart. I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes, saying so long. Thanks so much for watching and listening to episode 145 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you on Thursday.